Welcome to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Chris Edgar, author of Inner Productivity, A Mindful Path to Efficiency and Enjoyment in Your Work. On behalf of the entire Strategy Driven team, I would like to welcome you to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Chris Edgar, author of Inner Productivity, A Mindful Path to Efficiency and Enjoyment in Your Work. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag articles found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this special edition podcast, Chris Edgar, renowned author, speaker, and personal coach, shares with us his insights on eliminating the mind's distractions that diminish work productivity, heighten stress, and limit personal happiness. So now, without any further delays, let's get started. We are privileged to be joined by Chris Edgar, author of Inner Productivity, A Mindful Path to Efficiency and Enjoyment in Your Work. Chris is a renowned author, speaker, and personal coach who focuses on helping people follow their true career callings and find more enjoyment and efficiency in what they do. His articles have been published in Balance, Balanced Living, Edge Life, Mystic Pop, New Age Journal, New Renaissance, Self-Improvement, Well-Being, and Wisdom. Chris, welcome to the Strategy Driven Podcast.
Thanks, Nathan. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you on the show. I am thrilled to be able to introduce you to our audience. I loved Inner Productivity because you really provided a very new perspective on many of the things that we talk about on the Strategy Driven website. So it's really good to have you with us.
Thanks.
Now, on that note, Inner Productivity really presented a unique view that I think our audience is going to enjoy, and I think if they practice the principles that you talk about in the book, and certainly we're going to talk about on this podcast, it's going to help them become much more productive and enjoy their work a lot more. You know, I've read a lot of books, and a lot of them talk about time management. They talk about the physical things to go do to help make people more productive, the little tips and tricks of the trade, so to speak. But your book takes a very different approach. And so what I wanted to ask was, just to start our conversation, would you describe the underlying principle of what you call mindful efficiency?
Sure. I'm very into these tips and tricks for productivity and time management that you were talking about myself. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I've noticed is that they almost exclusively focus on your outer circumstances, so on ways that you can rearrange your work environment by maybe color-coding your folders or organizing your desk, rearranging your email inbox, and so on. What they don't usually focus on is what I think is the biggest obstacle that we face in getting our work done, which is really our own minds and bodies.
Yes.
So this is the issue that I think we most commonly face around our productivity. We're sitting there chugging along in our work, and everything seems to be going fine. And then some thought or some feeling, what I call some inner experience, will mm-hmm. come up that feels uncomfortable or threatening to us.
Yes. So
maybe it'll be a painful memory, or maybe a worry about something that might happen in the future, like imagining all the ways that the boss is going to criticize the presentation that we're doing and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't want to be with these experiences, because we find them so scary and uncomfortable, what we do is we try to push them away. And the most common way we do this is to try to distract our attention away from them by doing all the familiar types of activities that we think of as procrastination, you know, things like checking email and playing free cell, instant messaging with friends, and so on.
Sure.
And although doing these things takes our attention off the experience that we don't want to have, of course, while we're doing them, we don't get our work done. So when we're running away from our experience, we end up harming our productivity. Now, mindfulness in this context is first off about realizing that we're doing this, that many of us just run away from our thoughts and feelings automatically without even seeing that anything else is possible. And once we're aware of these habitual ways that we're reacting to these experiences, mindfulness, at least as I think about it in the context of productivity, is about becoming more comfortable and familiar with the experiences that we used to run away from, so that we can stay focused on our work and we can stay motivated even when those thoughts and sensations are coming up. So even when you're having that burning desire to check your email or you're worrying about what the boss will think and so on, you can still keep your attention focused on what you're doing because you've become accustomed to those sensations and they no longer seem so threatening and alien to you.
Now, one of the things that really caught my attention in the book was when you talked about how these mental distractions actually cause people to do multitasking. And we talk about multitasking a lot on the Strategy Driven website. In fact, we term it as one of our three thieves of time. In Inner Productivity, again, you talk about multitasking and how people are unknowingly doing it. Could you describe a bit how this occurs?
Yeah, this is a really good example of what I'm talking about in terms of mindfulness. We tend to think of multitasking as something that we choose to do. And
yes.
So a lot of the productivity advice out there says, you know, remember, don't multitask, you know, only do one thing at a time. But a lot of the time, what I found in working with clients is that it happens because of that tendency I was talking about to run away from experiences that we'd rather not have. So many of us will have the experience of sitting down to work and doing some task for 5 minutes and then starting to feel bored with it, then trying to escape that sensation of boredom because we find it uncomfortable by jumping to some other task or maybe jumping to some kind of procrastinating behavior like checking email or playing Minesweeper or something like that.
Sure.
And that's an example for a person who has that experience of boredom coming up and doesn't want to be with it. I mean, it may be fear or some other kind of sensation that we don't want to feel like. Maybe you'll start to feel afraid, and when you start doing your big project that, you know, has a lot of money riding on it or it's for the important client or whatever it is, and then you start to get afraid about what others will think about it, and so you turn to something that's lower priority, like organizing your folders, so that you don't have to experience those sensations. And so the end result is what we typically call multitasking. We keep bouncing from task to task because we don't want to be with the experience that our tasks bring up for us.
You know, this was one of those real eye-opening moments for me when I was reading your book, because I've always prided myself on being one of those people that resists multitasking.
Yeah.
And as I read your book, it's like, well, that's me. Yeah. It's exactly what you said. Yes, I organize my inbox. I start filing the emails that I sent, and I've justified it to myself as being, oh, well, I might need that later. But really, it's the distraction to get away. And again, this was a real eye-opener, and now I've become more aware when I feel that draw, and it's through awareness now I can avoid the multitasking that I was unknowingly allowing myself to drift into.
Yeah. So a lot of the time we're unaware. It sounds like you were at the start. The fact that you were using, you know, running off and organizing your inbox to get away from the sensations that came up when you were doing your project. But then when you got that awareness, you developed a sense of control or a sense of choice about what you would do.
Exactly. And that, just that one piece alone, has helped me increase my productivity at work now because it's brought that to my attention. So that was incredibly helpful.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah. But now, Chris, besides multitasking, you do talk about other adverse impacts that our thoughts can have. Could you convey to our audience what are the other negative impacts that our internal conversations will bring up in our work?
Sure. I mean, everyone's mind and body is different, so I think there will be different inner experiences that people find themselves repeating again and again. One of the most common problems that I see people running into is that they tend to lose sight of the larger reason why they're doing some task. So they'll be doing something that at least on the surface looks kind of mundane, like writing an email or plugging values into a spreadsheet. And really, no matter how wonderful our careers are, I think we all from time to time find ourselves in situations where we're doing something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we forget the larger purpose behind these tasks, not surprisingly, we start to feel kind of sluggish and unmotivated, and we start griping, why am I doing this to myself, and so on.
Yes.
And this is why I suggest that people, when they find themselves in this kind of situation, that they seriously ask themselves, why am I doing this right now? So really take that question on. Or what's the bigger contribution that I'm making to my colleagues or my clients or to the world with what I'm doing? What people find is that asking this question often gets them back in touch with the sense of passion or the sense of mission that got them on the career path that they're on right now in the first place. So even if you're doing something like organizing your folders, what you may come to realize is that you're doing it so you can more efficiently serve your clients and colleagues, and that will help you move toward all the wonderful goals that your business is meant to achieve. So it's about really seeing the larger context of what you're doing when you find yourself doing something that on the surface seems kind of mundane or minor.
Absolutely. And again, that was another item that I found helpful as I look, and I find myself sometimes doing, you know, it strikes me initially as, hey, this is kind of a trivial task. Why am I doing this? And then I get bothered by it. And then, of course, I procrastinate and I do something else, which just makes the situation worse. Having that bigger picture in the forefront, that reminder of, hey, this is a key supporting part of really what I want to go out and accomplish, is extremely helpful.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good way of putting it, that it's the key piece of the puzzle. And, I mean, I know, I don't know a single person who doesn't occasionally have to do something like that, no matter, you know, where they are in their career. So I think that's a pretty useful piece of advice for most people.
Yeah. Now, Chris, one of the things that you present in your book, or you present many of these mental distractions through the book, and you present exercises that are tailored to each to help people work through and overcome the distractions. And as I read Inner Productivity, it came across to me that there were some what I'll call foundational principles that struck me as being kind of a common theme to these exercises. I was wondering if you could tell us about some of these and why they're so powerful.
Sure. Well, I'll start with what I mean by inner productivity.
Okay.
Which is really the ideal mental and emotional state for getting the most done, and for getting the most enjoyment from moment to moment out of what you do.
Okay.
In the book, what I do is I break down inner productivity into three areas, which I call attention, intention, and foundation. Attention, what I mean is just the ability to hold your attention on a task for a prolonged period of time without the need to make a lot of painful effort, without the need to constantly drag your attention back from the past or drag it back from the future to where you want it to be. So that's one of the three areas. The second one I call intention, which is a clear idea of why you're doing the task that you're doing, the larger context that we were talking about earlier, which is key to staying motivated in what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last area is called foundation. And that means an unconditional sense of respect and appreciation for yourself, no matter what setbacks or problems or mistakes might happen in your work, as, of course, they will from time to time.
Sure.
But when we have this sense of foundation, that's when we get to let go of a lot of the anxiety that comes with basing our sense of self-worth on the results that we get in our work, which is what I think we usually do in our culture.
Right.
So those are the three basic ideas, and then there's a large number of exercises under each of those foundational principles or those areas of inner productivity.
Okay. Well, now, and you mentioned the exercises. What are maybe two or three that you find in general to be the most effective for folks?
Sure. One of the most basic ones I talk about in the book, and this is something that's helpful if you find your attention getting scattered all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
You're sitting there trying to focus on a task, and then you find yourself daydreaming about, you know, the tropical island that you'd rather be visiting or something like that, or maybe worrying about whether the bonus is going to be large enough this year.
The right.
Kinds of things that tend to come up. What I would do is take a moment and focus your attention on what you're feeling in some part of your body. So maybe notice the pressure of your feet against the ground and any other sensations that you might feel in the soles of your feet right now, like, you know, any tingling or pulsing, or really tune into what those sensations are, or feel your back against the seat. And what you'll find, I think, when you do this exercise is that that brings your attention back into the present, back into the task that's right in front of you.
Sure.
There's a lot of spiritual teachers and mindfulness teachers that have a great explanation for why this works very well,
mm-hmm.
which is that the sensations that are coming up in our bodies are always happening right now. So that if I ask you to focus your attention on what you're feeling in your hands or your back against the chair or something like that, you're not going to start daydreaming about what you felt in your hands 2 years ago or what you might feel in them 5 years from now. Your attention is going to focus into the present and the sensations that are coming up now, and that
okay.
takes the mind out of the past and the future.
Okay.
So that falls under this category of attention.
Mm-hmm.
The second exercise I'll talk about also falls into that category, and that's just to practice holding your attention. And this is based on something that's done occasionally in many types of Zen meditation. And that's to just pick out a spot or a point in the room. So pick out some point on the wall or on your desk or on the floor and just hold your attention on that point for, say, 5 or 10 minutes. And what you'll inevitably find as you do that exercise is that your attention will start to drift away, maybe into memories or concerns about the future,
mm-hmm.
or maybe you'll just find your eyes darting around the room looking for something more interesting than what you're looking at right now. And that's okay. I mean, don't beat yourself up about the fact that that's happening.
Okay.
Just gently bring your attention back to the point that you're looking at. And just repeat that as often as you need to over that 5 to 10 minute time span. And what you'll find very quickly as you keep doing this exercise is that the distractions happen less and less often. Your mind drifts away less and less often. And as you can imagine, it's very useful to cultivate that ability to pay attention to something for a long period of time if you want to stay focused and become more efficient in what you do.
Sure. Sure.
And so, yeah, that's another exercise under attention. And then the third exercise I would recommend just for people who might be having issues with anxiety as they work, like they're worrying about
okay.
What their colleagues are saying about them or what the boss is going to think or the client is going to say and so on, or how much they're going to get paid for this project or something along those lines. And that's actually disrupting their ability to focus on what they're doing. What I'd say in those moments is to take a moment and notice the way that you're breathing. Just
okay.
take conscious control of your breathing. We usually just let that happen outside of our awareness. But really pay attention and take control of it and notice any areas where you're holding tight. So maybe in your throat or in your chest or in your abdomen or diaphragm.
Mm-hmm.
And how that's cutting off the flow of the breath. And when people do this, what I found is that they fairly naturally become able to relax those areas once they notice the ways that they're tightening up. And when they relax and they start breathing more fully and more deeply, they often find a lot of that tension that they were feeling melting away, and their ability to concentrate coming back. And so that's the benefit of this exercise, that it helps you to let go of a lot of the tension you might be holding on to and bring your focus back to your work.
Sure. Oh, and those are great tools. Those are great tools. Now, Chris, I've read a lot of books, and I'm guessing our listeners have probably read some of these books as well. And they all seem to suggest that if we intellectually think that we can do something, that we will, by extension, be able to do it. That our success is rooted in our ability to overcome these mental obstacles. And it strikes me often that they take it kind of a step further and that they suggest that we are or we can become what it is that we think, what it is that's part of our psyche and our mental thoughts. In Inner Productivity, you say that people are not their thoughts, which struck me as being different. And I wanted to ask you if you would explain what you meant by that concept.
Yeah. This has to do with what I was saying earlier about our unconscious habits of reacting to our experience.
Mm-hmm.
So automatically running off and watching TV whenever we start to worry about what other people are going to think of the project and so on. When an uncomfortable thought or feeling comes up as we work, we tend to fall into our habitual way of reacting to it, you know, surfing the web or playing video games or something else. And because we're not choosing that reaction, because it's happening automatically, it's as if that thought or feeling really has us in its grip. So some spiritual teachers call this being identified with the feeling, believing that that feeling or thought is you, when in fact it's just an experience that you have.
Okay.
But that's what's meant by sort of being the thought or being the feeling. And separating from the feeling and realizing that it's not you is what I mean by developing this awareness that I'm talking about. Realizing that you are automatically reacting to the thoughts and sensations that come up in certain ways. And that's the first part of it.
Okay.
And the second part of it is just to allow those thoughts and feelings to be exactly as they are. So if a burning curiosity about your email is coming up, for instance, then just try sitting there and breathing and relaxing your body and allowing that sensation to pass away, instead of trying to do something about it, which would be our usual reaction, right? Either give in to the urge to check email or try to push it away and say, no, shut up, I've got to work right now. Just allow it to be and to pass away on its own. And the more that you do that, the more you start to realize that these sensations that we have are fleeting. They're not going to stick around forever. They'll dissipate if we allow them to and we don't resist them. And then the more comfortable we start to get with those sensations, the more we become able to say, thanks for sharing, you know, when they come up, and I'm going to keep typing my PowerPoint presentation or sculpting my sculpture or whatever it is that people do with the bulk of their time at work. So that's the value of realizing that you're not these experiences, realizing that they're something that you have rather than what you are. And when they come up, you can choose what you're going to do in the face of them.
Sure, sure. And now I want to also ask you about how to deal with a very specific feeling that you talk about in the book. And that is people who have this feeling that they don't have the right or the license to do something. They have a lack of either self-respect or self-confidence to actually take on this activity. What can they do to open themselves up and challenge those feelings and then move forward so that they're enabled?
Yeah. Well, for starters, what I'd say is to really get tuned in to the physical sensations that come up when you're having that thought, like, I don't have the right to do this, or I'm not good enough to do this, or whatever it is that usually comes up for you. If you pay close attention, what I think you'll see is that there's some kind of feeling you have that tells you that you don't have the right to do something or that you're not good enough and so on. So maybe you feel a sinking sensation in your stomach, for instance, when you start thinking that you can't do this project that you're interested in doing. once you've noticed what that sensation is, then focus your attention on that part of your body and breathe into that part of your body. So what I mean is to breathe in and out so that that part of your body that's tight or where that nauseous feeling is or something like that rises and falls with the movement of your breath.
Okay.
So what you might find is that that tight part will actually start to loosen up a little bit. And an amazing thing that can happen, and I've seen this so much in myself and in working with clients, is that when that tense area relaxes, it's often as if your view of the world actually relaxes as well.
Sure.
But like more possibilities seem to exist, and the world seems more receptive to you, and so on, than it may have seemed when you were holding tight there or when you were feeling nauseous or something like that.
Okay.
Really at a deeper level, it puts these kinds of fears in perspective when we realize that they begin with sensations in the body and that we can transform those sensations just by breathing and relaxing that area when they're coming up, rather than trying to fight against them in all these ways that we usually do, like, you know, telling the fears to shut up or saying, no, I believe that I'm the best, I believe that I can do it, and so on, and then it doesn't sound convincing and so on. I think this is a much more direct way of getting at that issue, which is actually much more compassionate to you.
Sure. Well, certainly. Now, Chris, there's another mental productivity just killer that I deal with, and I think a lot of our listeners are going to, at some point in time, have experienced and dealt with also. And that's what you've termed in the book as blankness. Could be in the form of writer's block or just some other sort of creative blankness. How do you suggest that individuals overcome this type of mental dilemma?
Usually when we get something like writer's block, our immediate reaction will be to fight against it. So to either get angry at it, as if it's something outside of us, or to get mad at ourselves, you know, saying, why are you so uncreative and so on? You know, I need to do this project. As I imagine a lot of your listeners have experienced, it usually doesn't work very well. Just like Carl Jung said, what you resist persists.
And I Yes.
think this is very true when it comes to that sense of creative emptiness that we all experience from time to time. So a different approach would be, instead of fighting against that blankness and trying to push it away, you know, making it into a problem, see if you can just allow it to be and let go of your resistance to it. So it's like we were talking about with the curiosity about your email. Try just sitting there and keep breathing and relax your body and allow that blankness to pass away on its own. And what I've noticed in myself and in working with clients very often is that writer's block is really like any other thought or feeling that we experience as human beings. So it's fleeting. If you don't resist it, it passes away on its own.
Okay.
Now, here's a bonus, which is that often I found that when we allow that sense of blankness to dissipate on its own, in the place of that blankness, we often find the best ideas that we've had all day or all week or even all month. So in other words, when we drop our resistance to the blankness, we're rewarded with a sense of inspiration. We might think of this as if the blankness were a test of our faith in our creativity and our imagination. And we pass that test, in a sense, if we trust that our inspiration will come up again.
Well, that is great. Thank you. And now, Chris, before we close, I did have one other question for you. And this is regarding your website, which is www.innerproductivity.com. And on the website, you provide just an abundance of additional resources that our listeners can access to help improve their inner productivity. Would you tell us a little bit about your website and the resources on it?
Sure. On the website, you'll see video excerpts from my talk that I gave here in California a few months ago, explaining a lot of the ideas of inner productivity and links to a lot of the articles that I've written. And so some of these will be in publications with a more spiritual bent, and some of them will be more business-oriented. There are things I've written specifically about inner productivity and startup businesses, for instance. So really, it will cater to your needs, I think, whether you're looking for just more inner peace in your work or you're looking to achieve specific productivity goals and so on. And you'll also find radio interviews and reviews of the book. So there's definitely a lot of information there about the ideas that we've been talking about.
Yeah, and the video is great. I've enjoyed being on your website, and we'll put a link from the Strategy Driven website to your website so our listeners can just click right through and find it if they forget the web address. Hmm. So that'll be great. Well, Chris, I want to thank you not only for sharing your time, but for your insights on increasing personal productivity by eliminating mental distractions. Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, I thoroughly enjoyed inner productivity, not just for the depth of insight that you shared on how to eliminate personal distractions, but also for the immediately actionable exercises that you provide to deal with each very distinctly different distraction. The book really spoke to me because the examples that you addressed were ones that I experience day to day and week to week in my own work, and the exercises, of course, then were very personal for me because they helped me deal with those distractions and, as I mentioned earlier, improve my own workplace efficiency and enjoyment. So I really highly recommend that all of our listeners go out, pick up a copy of Inner Productivity for themselves, but more importantly, I hope that they'll apply the principles and exercises that you present to help improve their overall work productivity and enjoyment. So thank you again for joining us.
Thanks very much, Nathan. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Chris Egger for being with us today and sharing his insights on eliminating inner distractions so to increase personal productivity and work enjoyment. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Chris Egger and Inner Productivity at www.innerproductivity.com. Until next time, so long.